Welcome to Within WordPress, the podcast about all those wonderful people inside the WordPress ecosphere. Today, we have a special guest from across the pond. With us today is Alex Standiford. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Happy to have you. I think we followed each other on X, formerly Twitter, for quite a while. But my default question, my first question for everybody is, where could they possibly know you from within the world of WordPress?
Well, I've been around for a little while, so I've in the circles, particularly in the US, I'm pretty well networked. I know a lot of people in the area. So if you've been to a WordCamp US, I went to Philly, I went to DC, but probably ran into you there. I basically am always in the networking track, like all day.
Oh, all the track is where it's at.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time there. You probably, if you know me from that, you might also know me from the last 4 years. I was traveling in a camper all over the country, and I had a lot of people interacting with me on X, just based on that kind of stuff. And then you also might know me just from Mastodon. I'm on the Mastodon community, and I'm a pretty big proponent of the open web and, you know, that kind of stuff as well. So I've met a lot of people through that as well.
I'm with you there. I'm not seeing it go as fast in the direction I would like. I've had a Mastodon account myself since 2016, but I like that there is some movement on it.
Threads just joined the Fediverse, so I'm pretty excited about that. So there's a lot of...
Saw that, yeah. You
know, overnight, tens of thousands of people just bam are in the Fediverse. That was a big deal.
The only thing is I don't like Threads, so...
Yeah, right. Yeah, I get that. I figure, you know, some people want that algorithm. So, and that's okay. Yeah. And I don't know. I understand that the way Mastodon works isn't for everybody. I just want it to be open. That's really, at this point, that's all I care about.
Yeah, I agree. I hope at some point X is going to end up in that direction. But for me, that's where the most enjoyment is.
Yeah.
It's at least the largest group of WordPress people still there. But yeah, let's just say that as a conclusion of your introduction, you've been around not only time-wise, but also location-wise.
Yes, for sure.
what prompted you to do the camper thing?
Well, it was all kind of just a crazy like amalgamation of events, right? So our lease was up for our rental. I wasn't in a position to be able to buy a house anytime soon. We were like, well, we could rent out this house for another year. And we were planning to do that, right? We weren't in any hurry to do anything. I had been working remote for a few years, and we had just bought a camper that November for like, it's crazy now because pre-COVID, it was right before COVID. So we bought this camper for like, you know, $6,000, which is just unheard of now.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had this camper and we had all this. Yeah. More than, oh my gosh. But so we had this camper and we were planning on basically parking it for a summer at one campground so we could see my family and hang out with them more and do stuff like that. And my wife, Kate, she came downstairs to me one day and she's like, you know, we have this camper, this lease is up and we could be anywhere in the country. And a lot of people are doing this, you know, RV life thing. We've talked about doing it a couple times. Is now the time? And I told her, I said, if you jump, I jump, Jack, let's do it. And lo and behold, 3 months later, I was, you know, ripping out stuff in a camper and all this stuff. And one summer later, I'm in Taos, New Mexico on a plot of land and, you know, like using a bucket toilet and a cistern. And, you know, it was nuts. It was the craziest 4 years of my life and I loved it. But
so what did you do in the 4 years? Did you like travel all around or did you have a plan or what did you have like, okay, this is we have X amount of states we haven't seen yet. This is what we're going to do or?
Yeah. So, our first year, we just wanted to go west. We're like, the first thing we had to do was I'm from Ohio, the Midwest, you know, and, I never really got to see like California or the American Southwest or anything like that. Like I've been to San Francisco, like for business or something like that, just flying in, but I never got to see the national parks or the mountains or any of that. So we kind of formed a plan around that and we happen to have some family in Texas. So we, strategize around that. So we would drive down to Texas from Ohio, which is about halfway to California, which is like, it's crazy when you think about it, like you think the Texas is west, but it's really kind of dead smack in the middle of the country. So we drive to Texas, we stay warm over the winter. And then from there, we would decide where we were going to go. And the first year we went over into, we went west into California. The second year we went up into New England, and we just kind of like strategized around that. So like all of our maps always ended up becoming this like giant loop that kind of started and ended basically in Austin. We picked that spot again, because it's centrally located, but south. So you're still warm. Mm-hmm. So it let you kind of like pick the east or west direction. And we just, you know, we did that. We would pick like a pinnacle, right? Like the farthest point that we want to reach that year. And we would basically just build a route around that. Our first year was Washington.
I'm just curious. Would you do a couple of days of driving and then parking, camping, or like hop every few, how does that work?
I'm asking because,
oh, okay. Is it something I wouldn't mind doing that? Well, probably the European version, but yeah.
Yeah. So there's so many different ways you can approach that. It depended on a lot of things, like the time of year. It depended on my workload at the time. It depended on like just everything. There was just so many different things. Like I still am sometimes. I was picking up some freelance work in the winter. So like when we're parked in Texas and not moving, I would just do a bunch of freelance work on top of my day job. So I basically didn't have a life for those 3 months. I was just, you know, parked at this campground, and I would just work, and I would walk around the campground, and the kids would play, whatever. But like the rest of the year, we would travel, like you're saying. And the schedule, I spent like 3 years trying to figure out the schedule, like what the perfect schedule was, before I finally decided that there isn't one, because we did everything from, I would do, 100 mile hops. So we would, like when we were in California, it made a lot of sense to do that, because there's so many wineries and breweries that you can park at for free, right? I mean, you gotta like stay there and like be a customer, right? So you're whether it's buying a sport or tasting wine or whatever, you know. But it was a pretty nice routine for a while until I got sick of drinking the wine. So basically I would wake up, I'd work a little, I'd drive 100 miles to the next winery, and I'd spend my evening on a private winery, you know, sipping wine with my wife. Sometimes we would see other full timers, and we would get to like talk about our travel stories with them, and then, you know, go to sleep, wake up, and do it all over again. That was great. I love that. But a couple months of that, and you get pretty tired. I found that no matter how I spun it, like we also tried to do like bigger hops where we would do what we would call a Georgia sprint, because it's 600 miles from Georgia to Ohio. And it seemed like every time we ever needed to do a big run, it was that. So we called it a Georgia sprint, but a 600 mile hop instead of a 100 mile hop. And that's all day, right? You wake up, you're driving, and you're done. And like, for me, that made a lot of sense in the middle of the country, where I didn't really, there wasn't as much stuff to like see, right? So if I'm in Texas and I wanted to get to say the East Coast, I would probably just do a couple 600 mile hops just to get past Mississippi and Alabama and like, you know, parts of the country that I wasn't as interested in seeing.
Yep. So the, essentially what you're saying is for 4 years, you went from half a plan to no plan to kind of figuring it out on the way.
Yeah. Our first year we were like on the rails. Like my wife had planned every stop between Texas and Oregon. And it was like dozens of stops. But by the second or third year, we kind of realized you only really need to be like 6 weeks out, like 4 to 6 weeks out, to be able to guarantee a spot. And we just started doing that. And then we found out that if you have your passport and you can go to Canada,
there's a lot of Canada.
It's a cheat code for the holidays, because for example, Victoria Day is like 1 week before Memorial Day weekend here in the United States. And Memorial Day is like this crazy camping weekend where like it's like the opening of summer, right? So everybody is camping, and it's so difficult to find a camp, like a reliable campsite that weekend, July 4th weekend, right? Independence Day. And then, Labor Day, which is like, it's kind of like the kickoff of like the announcement that summer's basically done, right? So like those 3 days are really difficult to find campsites on. So we just started going to Canada for those holidays, because they're not celebrating the holiday. So it's just another weekend to them. Yeah. But yeah, it was fun. I loved it. I did.
Did you do work camps in those 4 years as well? Did you plan around that?
Yeah, we did a little, not as much as you might think. Just because COVID had hit, right? I mean, we moved into the camper, and literally like 2 months after us moving in, COVID was in full swing. So like the camp, in fact, the campground that we were at was shut down technically, and we weren't, the only reason why we were allowed to even be there was because it was considered our primary residence.
Yeah.
So we were kind of like able to go in, but it was freaky because, the campground was like completely empty. So it was like, have you ever seen those like old, like amusement park photos of like abandoned amusement parks? It felt like that. It felt like a ghost town. Like we were alone in this campground, like isolated out in the middle of nowhere in the middle of this pandemic. And it just really kind of added to this eerie effect. It wasn't the best start to this life, but you know, we kind of cut our teeth and learned, like, you know.
So how long ago
do it
since you did the last trip?
I actually just got back yesterday from picking up our camper from Vermont. Our last trip was officially, I think, was November of last year. So we just stopped a few months ago, mostly because we had an incident where a truck driver, he was delivering our camper to Texas, and he damaged it on the way there and didn't tell us. So when we got there, we discovered the camper was damaged and we had to scramble to figure out where we were going to stay, and ended up being a whole mess. And the camper was damaged severely enough that we ended up needing to basically total it. So we were looking at the situation and we're like, okay, well, we could either take this money and build a new camper and like start over with all that, and or we could just say, okay, it's been 4 years. This was a good run. We had a lot of fun. We never intended to do this forever. This is a pretty good exit opportunity. So we opted for the exit for now. It was 4 years. We were getting tired of moving, and you know, it wasn't as fun as it used to be. So we were like, you know what? It's time to take it easy.
For me, this would be like a thing you would do in the summer, the long summer, right? So
yes.
What is it? Start in May, June, July, August, and then kind of head back.
Come back. Yeah, that makes sense.
But that's an interesting, I'm sure has been an interesting 4 years. Just by my own, so I've driven around the U.S. quite a bit. I'd say I've seen probably half the states, I guess, at some point. But just
most Americans,
possibly. But the difference that is from state to state, even though it goes ever so gradually, there is a difference. There is a different mini culture. There's different values and norms and stuff like that. Just encountering that from East Coast to West Coast must have been, looking back, a big thing you were processing on the side. Because it's not just the travel, right? It's also the meeting the people and interacting with them and all that.
Recognizing the differences and seeing their cultures in ways that they may not even recognize themselves, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Was there a moment when you said during those 4 years, instead of at the end, where you kind of have to make this decision, was there ever a moment where you went like, yeah, we're never doing this again? Or has it just been
yeah, we had some
okay yeah, so it's not like all...
For example, there was a summer that we spent in Taos, New Mexico, which is right on the northern border of New Mexico, right there by Colorado. It's a beautiful area. It has the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, and there's just it's beautiful. However, what we did was that summer we bought a parcel of land for like $5,000. We literally just bought it from a website. Like, and it was like, I figured worst case scenario, I'm probably going to spend that much money to camp somewhere for the summer. So if I stayed there for a summer,
it's money
pays for itself. I can spend that money or whatever.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry. So we had that money. We did that. We bought that land and we parked on it. Now, of course, it was just raw land. So we had to put a driveway on it and we had to put a cistern on it because it's New Mexico. So you can't drill for a well. The water is like so far down.
Yep.
You're 8,000 feet up, you know, and it's technically the arid desert. And anyway, so we had to get a cistern. We had to get water delivered and all this stuff. And it was crazy. Like, we didn't have septic. We didn't have electricity. So I was like, I actually have solar panels in my truck that I brought back from Vermont because I had brought them with me from New Mexico that summer. And we use them to, you know, power everything. Anyway, so it was crazy. So we're like, needless to say, I'm learning a lot. There's a lot of stuff going on. I'm a little like my resting stress level is a little higher than normal, just simply because I have to manage like, how much water do we have? And do I need to do anything with the toilets? And like, what's going on with the electricity? How's my battery right now? And all this, because none of it was sufficient, mostly because we were just experimenting and learning. It was great. It was fun. But in the middle of that, one of the big things about my system that I was depending on was that my fridge ran on propane. That way I didn't have to worry about the electricity of the solar panels or any of that stuff. Yep. It was running on propane. And the darn thing died like 2 months in, like right after we just started to get settled a little bit, and that fridge died on me, and I had to drive several hours south to find an electric fridge that would even fit in that camper. And it took me like a week to even find it. And like, it was a mess. So we had to like rip that fridge out, and it was built in, right? Cause it's a camper. It's not like it's just a residential fridge that you just roll out, you know? So we had to like figure out how to get that thing out of there and dispose of it. And you know, the fridge I bought was an electric fridge, cause I couldn't find a propane one that would fit. So I had to like change the capacity of my solar panels and all this stuff. And, so it was pretty rough then. And that night I was trying to sleep, and I was having some trouble sleeping some nights during that summer, because we are out in the middle. We are like on the edges of like American society here. Right. So like and there's other people that live there, but there's not a lot of houses. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, there's people that'll drive by in a U-Haul and you're like, oh, they live in that. You know what I mean? Like it was a very like countercultural kind of place. And, so I was never, I was always a little like on edge, to say the least, that like, who knows, like it's just not, you don't exactly feel safe out there, which is a lot of the reason why I left.
Yeah.
But that night I'm already like stressed from all this, and I'm sleeping, right? And I'm trying to sleep, and I hear noises outside, because it's dead silent out here in the middle of nowhere, right? There's no trees to rustle, because it's all sagebrush. So it's silent. So you can hear the slightest sound. So I hear this rustling sound outside. I'm like, what the heck is that? What is happening here? So I peek out the window and I can't see anything. And I open the door and I look to see what's going on. And I still don't see anything, but I think it's behind my truck. I'm like, what the heck is that? And I'm freaking out, thinking it's like some like drug addict or something, like, you know, just like ransacking through my stuff outside. Yep. And they heard me, the sound heard me, whatever it was, seemed to hear me and started rustling in my direction. I couldn't see them and I panicked and shut my door. I was like, oh my God, what's happening? You know, I'm freaking out. And I after getting my composure a little bit, I peek out the window and it was two donkeys. They had escaped from somebody's house, and they were just curious. They were poking around, you know. But it was two donkeys, which is the most New Mexico thing I can imagine. But, you know, so I obviously felt very relieved, but at the same time, that was actually kind of the breaking point for me for Taos and almost for camping in general. I was like, I am not cut out for this. Like, this is too extreme for me. I need to take a step back. And so literally the week after that, we went back to Texas. We went to this like Jellystone like resort with like a jump pillow and a swimming pool and electricity and you know, pizza that can be delivered to me and all this stuff. And I was like, give me society. I want it back. I accept your taxes. I understand now. There's some valid points, you know.
Funny. You you mentioned freelancing on the side. What would be the main job?
I work for GoDaddy.
Okay.
So I do, I work on their WooCommerce product, their WooCommerce offerings.
Okay. So that means whatever freelancing you do is also WooCommerce related, or do you pick something entirely different?
It's usually just WordPress related. A lot of the stuff I do these days has been around plugin development or consulting on how to build a WordPress plugin or maintain a WordPress plugin. So like, people will often come to me because they have a lot of technical debt and they don't know how to fix it, right? So I'm really good at refactoring. I'm really good at taking bad code and turning it into scalable code that's maintainable.
For those of us listening who do not know what technical debt is, could you briefly explain?
Yes, absolutely. The best way I can think about it is think about the maintenance on your house. So if you have a furnace that you buy, and maybe that furnace is, you bought it in like the 80s, right? And it's showing signs that it's going bad, right? And instead of in the 90s, maybe you bought a different furnace to put into there, but it wasn't like the right kind of furnace for what you need, but it was something that would get you by for now.
Yep.
But you know, later on, you're going to have to fix that or replace that furnace. That is a debt, right? It's a technical debt where it's like, I don't actually have like a monetary or a time-based like expense here, but I know that this is a problem that I have to fix later. Yes. Yeah. So technical debt in programming is that kind of thing where you take a shortcut before you launch something that will end up biting you later. Most of the time, people don't even know that they're incurring it. That's the real problem. So you'll end up with a plugin that, you know, is successful and bringing in decent money and stuff like that. But then your customers will be asking for features or something, but what you built doesn't, it can't like do the thing they're asking for from you easily. Yep. Without you having to like rewrite a whole bunch of your software. And that's kind of where I come in. So what I like to do for freelancing is I'll come in, I'll look at the code base and I'll say, these are your pain points. We can fix these pain points by doing these things. And also, here's how we get to that, because you can't just like rewrite every, you can't just like stop using the software and stop progressing it and then build it. You know, you're kind of like making changes to it as it's running. So you can't like stop it. You know what I mean? So you have to like incrementally change it over time.
Yeah. Interesting challenges are always there when you're removing technical debt or adding features that exceed whatever you had in mind as you were building it.
Yeah.
I would assume you have experience with building WordPress plugins to begin with.
Yeah.
Generally, if somebody understands how to unspaghetti code, refactor it, understands the concept of technical debt, then they are also capable of, you know, designing it the way it should be.
Yes.
Is that something you do also? Do you build plugins from scratch?
Yes. That's really how I cut my teeth in WordPress in general. So I started freelancing in like 2014 because I was transitioning into WordPress from being a mechanical engineer. Okay. And between 2014 and now, I've literally built hundreds of plugins. Cool. Everything from a single file to like, you know, really big complicated things.
Are you,
you know, and everything in between.
Are you currently building something?
Yes. So I am building a piece of software called Siren Affiliates. And basically what it is it's an affiliate plugin that kind of fits into what I'm talking about the scalability. So like you can, instead of it just being only an affiliate program, you can do all kinds of different things like maintain course.
So I just want to make sure that I fully understand. It's a plugin that facilitates the affiliate component of whatever you want to have affiliated.
Yeah, exactly.
And then connected to WooCommerce or EDD or anything. How does
WooCommerce at launch? A big part of my strategy is going to be integrating with other plugins as I go. But WooCommerce is going to be day one, just because it kind of has to be. I mean, everything integrates with it.
I want to make sure that I understand the full scope. So it's an affiliate system. Four products in your WooCommerce store, and you are giving an example of courses.
So and then in the future, like I'm going to be integrating with other things like LMSs and stuff like that. But the idea is that an affiliate program is just one possible program that you can create, right? And it's if you think about it as like a pay for performance kind of thing, where like you pay this person based on how well they perform, right? So there's all kinds of different things inside of a business that can fall under that. I just today was talking with my sister-in-law, and she's with an electrician, and that electrician got a bonus because the project was done on time.
Okay.
So like that's a pay for performance program. So like Siren will allow you to build, you know, an affiliate program, but it will also allow you to build something like, say, maybe a multi-course like Udemy clone with WordPress, where you have like, you know, a dozen or so different course creators or however many, it doesn't matter, And all of them maybe get paid based on how many views they had or how many course completions their students brought in. And maybe they get paid like a percentage of the available bucket or on top of like their sales or their cut or anything like that. Like there's all kinds of ways you can do that.
That's a very different approach to a regular affiliate, because a regular affiliate, you know, you click on the link. So you track the link. If there is a payment following that, clicking the link, first you store the cookie, you check the link, and then within whatever specified amount of days, purchase is happening, a commission is taken care of. So that's not necessarily a small feat just to have that as an affiliate plugin, but you went like, you know, I'm going to challenge myself here, because by the sounds of it, you're going to make everything possible to sort of track.
That's the goal, is to make it to where if something can realistically be tracked, right, and you have a way to be able to measure something, you should be able to incentivize people for it. So maybe it's a support system, right? So maybe you have people, support representatives on your team, and maybe you pay them based on the number you pay them. Obviously you would pay them a base payment, right? I'm not suggesting that this should replace like a salary. That's not what I'm saying. But like it could help incentivize further some other things, like getting good feedback or getting any feedback, right? Maybe it doesn't even really matter. Maybe it's how many tickets they do in a month. Maybe it's their volume. Maybe you give them a cut based on any time they ever convert an internal sale or something like that. Like there's so many different ways you can approach that. Another one is a bug bounty, right? So maybe something that I plan on doing with Siren is making it so that a person who other developers can work on, you know, bugs that I put that are like in a public place for like the people in that program. And if they do that, they solve that problem, you know, they get some kind of payout, right? So there's different programs that can exist.
That is
an affiliate program, just one of them.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting approach. I don't think I've ever heard of. For the record, I'm not fully entrenched in the affiliate world. Obviously, I have some affiliates links here and there, but that's relatively passive. But what you're essentially saying is you think of the metric you want to track. It needs to be in the database so we can track.
Yep.
I'm assuming, and from there, anything can be the trigger to pay out affiliate.
Yeah, exactly. And it really breaks down into a few different pieces, right? It's like, what's the thing that we can measure? What the value of that thing we're measuring? And then how are we paying it out? So like another side effect of this that I hadn't considered whenever I was building it, but I'm seeing now is with this system, you would be able to avoid one of the things that really annoys me about affiliate programs today is that one affiliate gets paid. And it's almost always the last affiliate who made the referral, right? Which kind of stinks for like people who have a product that is a considerable commitment. So maybe three or four different affiliates have linked to this product and recommended it during this person's research, but only one of them is going to get the credit for that. But this system would make it possible for all of them, if you chose, right? You can opt out of this and you can do it however you want. But if you chose, you could say, pay everybody an equal amount, or you could say pay the last person, you know, most of this, and then pay like every one of them like a degrading percentage based on the order. Like there's so many different ways you can approach these things, and I haven't even like fully imagined what those possibilities are. I'm just building the system that allows people to be able to like measure and associate those different data points with rewards.
I recently saw Katie Keith of Born 2 Plugins. She shared, I think she shared something on X saying something along the lines of that they promote, no, not promote, they reward internal staff, like support, if they happen to, you know, maybe the client only has one plugin, but then converts to somebody who buys the whole suite. If that happens based off of what support has done or suggested, they are being compensated for.
Yeah, I think that absolutely.
I'm pretty sure that's what, I think it was her who said it. But if I hear you correctly, that is just one of the scenarios that it would solve.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a great scenario because I think your support team is kind of your sales. I mean, they're your internal sales team, really.
Yeah, for sure.
They, you know,
Yeah, there's different ways of looking at it, because you could also argue, and you know, this is part of their job, and if that happens, yay, more for us. But I think in a more appreciative way, this is a wonderful gesture, which I think for sure. And this is just one angle. I'm well aware, but it's an angle I'm familiar with. So if somebody from your service desk understands support and knows how to help, that doesn't necessarily mean they also know how to sell.
Right. Right.
And this would at least incentivize them a little bit more than, you know, yeah, you can also look there, but more in terms of actually selling it to the client. I like that. You can hear that I like this idea, because it treats the whole affiliate thing from a very different perspective. So affiliate, you know, most people, when they say, you know, I do affiliate, you go, yeah, okay.
Yeah, right. It's the same thing. And the only reason why I even call it Siren Affiliates right now is because it's the only program that everybody's familiar with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you could call it remuneration or... rewarding, like, or
rewards, siren, yeah. Collaborators.
Why the siren part, by the way?
It's about the siren song and the idea of it attracting things to you.
Yeah, I like it. So how did you get to this? Because this is this purely born out of this is a problem I see, I want to fix it.
Yeah, kind of. Well, yeah, definitely. So it's funny because I've been noodling around the idea of different programs like this forever. I mean, as long as I can remember. One of the first, in fact, I just imported my entire Twitter history into my personal site a couple weeks ago. And one of the earliest tweets I had was in 2009. And it was like talking about how I had a program that I developed for photographers to, because I was creating digital montages at the time, because it was actually, like, you know, not super automated quite yet. And I was offering programs to photographers where they could sell my montages using their photos to people. So like, and I was already thinking about stuff like that, even back then. Obviously I got into affiliate marketing. Affiliate marketing is just kind of a part of the conversation in blogging in general, right? So like, and I got into WordPress. I was doing tutorials with the photo editor GIMP, and I was doing affiliate marketing to make some money with that. And I also spent a few years working on Affiliate WP, actually. So I was actually on that team for a little while.
From Awesomotive.
Yeah, well, it was Sandhills at the time. Yeah, I never worked for Awesomotive, but I've had some experience with that. And then whenever I actually ran an agency for a while, and when I was running that agency, I was actually doing a lot of this kind of stuff. The entire format of the agency was built around this basis. So like, every project I would have come in, I was doling out a percentage.
This format was the last I heard.
So this format was actually used from top to bottom in the agency I was working in. And so like I would sell a project, right? And I would literally base the budget of that entire project based on the incentives that I was going to pay every person from top to bottom in the company who was going to touch that. So, and it could be, you know, five or six people who would touch this project, but all of them would get a piece of that pie. So the thing about that made it nice was whenever the business was making money, it was, you know, it was paying out everybody, including myself, but when it wasn't making money, it didn't have any expenses it was incurring. So like, it was really nice because if I was only working 6 months or 3 months out of the year or whatever for freelance, I didn't have to think about my monthly expenses really, or any of that stuff. It was able to kind of scale up and scale down, based on my needs. I was thinking a lot about that. I created a blog content bonus program where, you know, people who are writing content on my site, if they, got people to fill out a specific form and that person, I converted that person into, project, they would get, you know, a cut of that sale as a person who attracted them to me in the first place. So I was doing a lot of that stuff. I was already thinking about different ways an affiliate program could be done, or a program can be done.
Yeah. I like it. This is one of those ideas that when you hear, they go like, oh, nobody thought of this before?
No.
Is there a competitor?
Not a direct one. Not one that I found. Not one that can do exactly this. Can, you know, have different programs and stuff like that. There's plenty of different options for affiliate programs, right? And there's
the world.
And there's plenty, and they all have different approaches to affiliate programs, right? So you have some that can do like multi-level marketing. And if you, you know, really want to go down that road.
Yeah.
And yeah, right. So there's different things like that, but
it's in general, the world I want to not touch.
Yeah. It's kind of sleazy, but I got bit by that when I was younger. I joined into one of those and it just,
Who hasn't at one point? I mean,
yeah, no kidding.
Like, certainly in the early, in the late 90s, these things were everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah.
And at the time we didn't know what the consequences was. We didn't really know what it meant. So, you know, I've jumped into something where like, hold on, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Yep. 2 years in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. 2 years. Much money for energy drinks?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the thing, what it was called. I don't remember, and probably because I don't want to remember.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, but that's interesting. So your day job, you touch a lot of the WooCommerce side of things in terms of the servers around it. And in the night job, you go like, I didn't quite see enough code today. Let me jump into something that is heated and people have an opinion about it. But I'll find myself something that is uplifting, because I genuinely think you have an interesting product here where a field, the world of affiliates, is frowned upon is probably not the right word, but more of
stigmatized,
like
stigmatized, probably.
Yeah. And then finding a wonderful way to, you know, segue yourself into, okay, but you can do it in a nice way, but, you know, treat it a little different and have different rules and different metrics and all that. Like it. I like it.
Yeah, for sure.
So on the WooCommerce side of things, at GoDaddy, what kind of things do you do? Can you share a little bit about that, or is that?
I can share some. Sure. So at GoDaddy, I do a lot of the coding for the managed WooCommerce they're offering for, you know, their yep. WooCommerce product. And pretty much I'm mostly focused on making sure that the integration in their commerce platform plays nice with WooCommerce. So I do a lot of, and you know, that basically means I have to touch pretty much every part of it, because it is impacted in every way. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I'm doing a lot of that, a lot of thinking about Woo. And I mean, that's what I was doing prior to, right? When I was working on Affiliate WP, at the end of the day, if you're in WordPress and you're touching e-commerce at all, you have to know WooCommerce. You just have to know it top to bottom. There's no getting around it.
There used to be many options to do this inside of WordPress. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, I can't think of any e-commerce module that has a, even if I look back at WooCommerce, which obviously at one point was Jigoshop, but even the impact that it, in the early days, the early days of WooCommerce, I don't think there's anything right now that has the potential to go down the same trajectory.
I don't think at this point.
No. So I've used this quite a bit actually, back in the day, Shop with double P.
Sure Cart comes to mind too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's more recent, right? So.
Right.
SureCart is, and I haven't worked with it yet, but I like the premise of it in terms of what it tries to solve, like being the one solution that has everything in it, mm-hmm. versus WooCommerce. And now I'm extending it, and we all know the problems of extending one piece of code written by person A with an extension written by person B, C, D, E, F, G, A. You know.
That's where the technical debt comes in.
exactly. No, but I mean, from early days, I don't think there's anything left. Like SureCart is, as far as I know, relatively recent. Then you obviously have EDD, but I think they kind of solidified on the D part.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I don't think there's much usage of EDD as a products handler, a general store. So it's kind of interesting to see how WooCommerce is slowly but surely has become, you know, the one that we're all thinking of and referring to.
Yep. And they've been, you know, working a lot. It's changed a lot. WooCommerce has over the last like 3 or 4 years. Crazy how much they've put into it.
Yeah, and I would even say that I think we're in the beginning of the on-ramp of professionalizing it, solidifying it.
Yeah.
We obviously have a scalable database structure available to us now.
Now, yes.
So that's nice, but you know, that's long overdue.
Yes.
We have a bunch of general stability inside of WordPress, which are also now being used in WooCommerce, all the wonderful work that the WordPress core performance team did over the last 2 years. We can see how that's all being moved over to WooCommerce in terms of hooking into that and making it more performant. So I'm a big fan of making it as performant as humanly possible.
Me
but
too.
It's still just mainly WooCommerce, right? It's just,
that's the only four products, right? I mean, there's also, you know, you've got membership management systems and learning management systems like Lifter, LMS and whatnot, that, you know, they all have their own checkout process and things like that, but it's focused on that specific type of product. It's not, you know, WooCommerce is the only one that's just generic. You can sell digital, you can sell physical, you can sell both.
So I have clients who have the full spectrum. I have a brick and mortar store that also uses WooCommerce, but you can go and walk into their store, and I have, and everything that, like literally everything that they have in the store, you can find there.
Yep.
Well, maybe not literally. I think they have like a fourth is not in store and they can order in, and you know, you'll have it then the next day, but that, you know, that's one end of the spectrum. And there's like all the other versions where it's just digital or where it's just selling and hooking to access to courses and all of those things. It is a huge array of what you can do with WooCommerce nowadays. I'm not saying that you can't do this with Shortcart or can't do this with EDD. I'm sure to some degree you can, but it's interesting looking back how it became the de facto standard.
I think the place where EDD tends to win over WooCommerce is the licensing aspect of it. They've done, you know, Sandhills did a really good job of setting that up. They were, you know, it goes without saying that they were obviously dogfooding their own product. So they had, you know, really good licensing set up all built into that plugin. I think WooCommerce has one, but honestly, I haven't used it. So I'm not, I can't speak for how it is, but
there's a few versions actually. So I think that's already an issue.
I don't plan on using EDD for Siren, so I have to figure out what I'm doing with that soon.
It's interesting to see how that has changed over years. And you're working at GoDaddy on a specific environment, so to say, around this particular product. There's plenty of other products that you could do the same thing, right? But we're still not fully seeing it. When do you think we have it? We have the situation where we have these types of verticals where you can get the generic hosting, and now we have WooCommerce hosting. But do you think we'll move in the direction where you'll have BuddyPress hosting, BuddyBus, or LMS hosting, whether that's Lifter or LearnDash? Obviously, we have those at the parties that make them. But do you think this is going to we're going to see more of this?
I think. The thing is with GoDaddy's e-commerce offerings, the one thing that's kind of the big thing about that promise, your example earlier where you have a client who works in a store, has a store, right? And they sell online and on that store. That's a multi-channel scenario. And there's also scenarios where maybe a person's selling stuff on like Amazon or eBay or like different places on top of that. So you could potentially be selling in five or six different places at once, right?
Yep.
So like the GoDaddy's e-commerce offering is intended to centralize all of that so that you can sell through your GoDaddy account on your eBay site and Amazon and here, and it's able to track it all in a single centralized location. So to answer your question, I think the way that this would form is probably, at least for GoDaddy, I would guess, and I don't know this, like this isn't like any kind of internal information or anything like that. This is literally just a guess from an outsider perspective. I would guess that a platform like that, if it was going to go into like LMSs or LMS specific hosting or something like that, I could see maybe kind of pivoting that centralized approach to work with those LMSs as a separate channel or something like that. Do you know what I mean? But not necessarily optimized hosting, but I mean, I'll never say never, you know what I mean? I think that I could see places like WP Engine in particular, or, you know, like really niched, hosting providers like that.
Yep.
I can see them doing something along those lines where it's specific to that.
I think my opinion is, or my guess is, I guess, because it's not really an opinion, but the direction it'll move in general, I think, whether that's hosting or plugin build, because, you know, your plugin, yes, it's part of affiliate, but it's a niche part within affiliate.
Right.
I think that's a trend that we're seeing across many other spectrums of you know, the market that we work in. So whether that's the niche is more into the WordPress side of things, or the niche is more into the plugin side of things, or the hosting side of things, I think the general trend is that we are going to see more niches, because the more tailored you are to your end public, the better you can sell to them. And if you, if they do that smartly, they'll use WooCommerce, probably, maybe your plugin as well, so they can track whatever's happening.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I think they should, but I'm biased.
So, the first plugin you mentioned, like, this is what I'm working on, was a very interesting one, but I'm kind of curious, do you do other plugins as well? Do you have other plugins that people can purchase, or is everything, or are there free versions available?
I have a couple of older plugins that I have on the repo that I, you know, every once in a while will dip into and check on, but, I'm not really doing much with them. They're just kind of there and they, you know, they exist. I mostly did them because I was learning, honestly, and I didn't realize that, oh, hey, you know, this is actually a commitment and you're going to have to maintain this. You got what you wanted out of it.
I can share with from personal experience that, if that is the case and you are done with that said plugin, you can either hand it over to somebody who wants to work with it, or ask the plugin team to delete
it down. Yeah, I have done so. I'm due to do it. I just haven't done it yet. I already have. And what's crazy is I know there's a leak. It was in the craft beer industry whenever at the time, because for a while I was in that niche. And I know there's at least a couple of agencies that could probably just scoop it up and be fine. And I just haven't taken the time to do it. But I have a couple of things. So one of the things, I haven't done it yet, but a lot of Siren, I've built it very, very intentionally. And one of the key intentions was to make sure that it is positioned so that if I ever wanted to use this software outside of WordPress, either as a SaaS or something like that, I can make that pivot without basically rewriting the code, or worse, running WordPress for the entire SaaS platform, which would not be ideal. So all of that code is separate, right? So I've got like layers. So there's like this framework that I've built that allows me to do that. And then there's Siren on top of that. And then there's, you know, the integration between the two that makes it all work. But I've been thinking about open sourcing that entire top layer called I call it PHP Nomad. But I haven't open sourced it yet because it's not quite ready. And I haven't decided if I want to. but then I also do have another framework that is open, very much open source. And it's also a WordPress plugin development framework. It's called Underpin. But that one isn't designed to allow you to be able to work in or out of WordPress. It's just designed to make a service provider like Pattern in WordPress easy. So it just kind of, one of the things that's annoying about development in WordPress is that, at least in my experience, is that a lot of it, there's not a lot of structure to the code. It's a whole lot of arrays that are, you know, you don't get any type hinting from your IDE or anything like that. And it's very inconsistent, right? So over the years, the way that we've approached development has come from people contributing with different mindsets from different times, right? So if you think the original version of PHP, traits were not even a thing yet. You know what I mean? Like, classes weren't even really a thing. So like, you have to like understand that there's generations of stuff, and with a commitment to never breaking backwards compatibility, there's a lot of stuff they just simply can't do. So Underpin, the purpose of that is to kind of solve that problem and kind of pipe all that through a consistent framework that can be changed, that can break backwards compatibility because it's not technically part of it.
So from a different bootstrap to different implementations of functions, how far are you taking it?
There's literally a package for like everything. So like there's like a user package, for example, that just... that makes it so that if you wanted to create a role package, right? So if you wanted to create custom roles or anything like that, it can be done. It abstracts away the hooks and all this stuff and just makes it to where it's all just like the same set of methods. And it does that across everything. So like if you wanted to create, because if you think about it, WordPress is really just a whole bunch of registries. Like that's really all it is, right?
A
whole bunch of them, right? So even actions and filters themselves are inherently a registry. So like everything's a registry. So once I realized that, I was like, well, if I just make the way to add to everything in WordPress consistent, this would be a lot easier, right? So that's kind of the baseline for it. So if I want to add a user, the set of methods I call are through this user package, and it's very clear how it's done because it's all like type hinted and stuff.
So what's interesting is that you're essentially saying you've in a way you forked WordPress.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it very much depends on WordPress. So it's not sure, a fork of it, but
in a way you're using WordPress's inherent means of adjusting the code or extending on it. You're using that mechanism to fork it into the version of what it actually theoretically in the direction that it should be.
Yeah. A word for it is encapsulate, right? So I encapsulated WordPress. Basically, I put it in a little bubble and I said, okay, you can work however you want, but Underpin is going to kind of wrap up WordPress and you as the developer would interact with Underpin directly and it would interact with WordPress. And then you have control over, you know, the version that you're of Underpin that you're using and all of that stuff. And it's separate from WordPress.
Yeah. And you haven't open sourced this yet.
That one is open sourced.
That one is. Okay.
Yeah. PHP Nomad, which is a completely separate thing. I haven't.
Where can people find it?
That is at, I think you can just go to Underpin. Let me just double check real quick. Hold on. Okay. So yeah, if you go to GitHub, it's github.com/underpin-wp.
Awesome. I think that's a great one. To leave the show on, because that's essentially what this is about, right? WordPress is open source.
Yep.
And sharing good solutions with each other is how we learn to make even better solutions.
Yeah, sharing the bad ones too.
I didn't go down that road, but yes. Thank you so much for sharing, Alex.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
All right, you're most welcome. And we'll see you on the next one.
Yep, till next time.